How's she going by? This is Jimmy the Janitor. You're listening to my buddy Crash Kreddle on the Medley.
Welcome to this week's edition of The Medley. I'm Blake Crash Priddle, and today we're going to be speaking with Sandy Gillis, better known by his stage name Jimmy the Janitor. Jimmy the Janitor is one Maritime comedian that's known for his good, clean comedy rated PG, and his comedy has been featured on radio stations across the country, as well as TV networks like The Comedy Network and CTV. We'll learn all about how this interesting and funny character came to be, and what makes his comedy unique. Before becoming a comedian, you worked in the radio industry. How were you motivated to pursue a career in radio?
Back in high school, they had a 15-minute radio show on the local station, and they invited people to come in. And I had been practicing being a radio pronouncer, as we used to call it, on a card table with an old reel-to-reel tape machine in my living room for a whole year. And I wanted to be that rock jock on the radio. And when the opportunity came up on the high school show, I grabbed it. And at the end of the 15 minutes, the producer said, "You know, you don't sound bad for a kid." And I was about 18, 17. And he said, "Would you know, you like to audition for the station?" And I did. And he said, "Well, you know, you're going to need a little work." He gave me a production studio to play in for 6 months. In the evenings and weekends, I'd have a full studio all to myself. And because nobody else was around. And eventually I made it on the radio as a high school kid.
What local radio station was that?
That was CHER in Sydney. It was a new upstart radio station that had started broadcasting about 3 years before I got in the door. And they had all great new gear, beautiful location. And they were the number two station. They were up against the big guns across the street who had been there for 50 years and sort of owned the market. And as it turned out, when I eventually got the evening, what we call rock show at the time, it was the 6 to 9 show playing top 40 on this station. It was the first and only time that our station ever beat the big guy. And it was with that top 40 show that just was less talk and more music, really. And it was where I sort of cut my teeth in radio, and then from there I moved to St. John's, Newfoundland, where I became the rock jock in the city, and we had a TV show twice a week as well, like inviting teenage students in. They'd bus them into the TV station, and I would host a show with a live band, and it was pretty exciting all around for 20-year-old, and spent a couple of years there, and then moved back to the mainland and did radio for another 30 years.
What other radio stations did you work at in Atlantic Canada? Obviously some in Nova Scotia, and did you work at any stations in PEI or New Brunswick?
New Brunswick was my first stop after Newfoundland. I was doing the evening show, and they offered me the morning show, which was sort of the coveted gig. If you're a radio announcer, you want to do that 6 a.m. to 10. And I was already doing character voices in Newfoundland, and I was offered the morning show to be a funny morning guy. And so I had a bunch of characters, did a lot of funny segments in the show, and did that for would have been 3 years in Moncton before becoming a manager of a small station for this same company. And it was something I hadn't planned. I wanted to be an entertainer, but when offered the radio station, I took my long hair and went to a place called Sussex and had a staff of six. And it was the beginning of a long career with a company called Eastern Broadcasting. I moved from a small station to a medium station. And then within 3 years, I was promoted to Moncton to run the two stations in that city. And they were the number one and two stations in the market. So it was a great job, actually. And so I spent most of my broadcast career operating out of Moncton and became a partner in that company and picked up a few more radio stations to manage. And I lived a charmed life that I hadn't planned. I was going to join the RCMP back when I was a teenager. That's what you did in Cape Breton. You would join the Army or the RCMP, and then radio came along, and it changed my whole life.
When you did character voices on the radio, do you remember some of the characters that you voiced, and is that where Jimmy the Janitor came from?
I would do different accents and different characters. Jimmy was never one of them. I was running these stations in Moncton from about 1978 to 1995, I ran the stations. And in 1987, we were getting a competitor against us with a classic rock station. And the morning guy I had on the radio station was a great announcer, but he wasn't very funny. And I figured we needed some fun in the show. So I was thinking, what will I put in there? And I had done voices. I thought maybe I would have a Cape Breton character because I'm a caper, and I had to think of why he would be there in the radio station. So I made him the janitor of the radio station. He'd pop into the morning show. He'd do 30 to 60 seconds of fun stuff with the morning guy and go back to supposedly cleaning the building. This accent that Jimmy has is something I had to learn, actually. I didn't have it because when I grew up in my teenage years, I did everything to rid myself of any kind of accent so I wouldn't be dragging it with me on the radio wherever I worked. And so I learned what basically is a Glace Bay and a Waterford accent. And that became Jimmy, and Jimmy used to appear on the station. And then within about a year, we were getting requests from our other stations to have Jimmy on. We had nine stations at the time, and so we sent the show out on tape, and that led to requests for Jimmy to appear, which was never in the cards. It was always a radio feature, so I had to think up some character outfit and started doing special events and conventions, and eventually we did theaters, and down the road we did a national syndicated show, which was on your radio station in La Paz, and many other stations, 90 markets. So it allowed Jimmy the character to become known in places he's never been. So we would go to those markets, rent the theater, rent the community center, do a presents deal with our radio station in the market. In your case, it would be, what was the station? And I'm trying to think out loud here in the Paw. What was your station there?
It was CJAR.
CJAR, yes. And that was the O'Brien family, who are fabulous people. They ran the stations in the north, and I was on all of their stations. So we would do a tour up there every 3 years. And, we'd be in Edmonton and, a ton of stations around Alberta as well, because Jimmy was on country radio from one end of the province to the other. And we had stations in BC. We would do tours there, and in Saskatchewan, Ontario, a lot of stations. We had northern stations, and then we had southern stations. And of course, in the Maritimes, Jimmy was everywhere. We had all over New Brunswick, all over Nova Scotia, and all of the stations in PEI. So it allowed me to book these theaters and go in and do a 2-hour comedy show. And we would do probably 50 a year up till COVID. Après COVID, we're starting back, probably do 30 this year. Only started back in November of 2022. Not as many shows, just not taking as many, just sort of growing back at it gradually. But I intend to tour for a long time. My lovely bride says, you know, when are you going to retire? And I said, well, I did that when I left radio. You know, when we sold the stations, I retired. But this is fun. This is having fun. People laughing at the end of your job, which doesn't happen very often. I keep telling her I'm working till 2032, and then I'm going to go part-time. So could be doing this. It's funny, over the years, I've run into people like Don Heron, who you may not know, but he played a character named Charlie Farquharson. And Charlie was on radio and television, and he was an actor. He was a Hollywood actor. He was a CBC host, but he played this character. You know, he performed until he was 87. And I used to meet up every summer with Charlie at a barbecue we were both invited to in PEI. You know, I thought, if he can work till 87, then I can too. So who knows? Doing comedy is fun. You can get wheeled out and do it for seniors, you know, and provide some laughs for them. Yeah, it's an unending opportunity.
Well, it's like they say, if you enjoy your job, then you don't work a day in your life.
Exactly. And that's kind of the truth. But in this business, you know, I'm sitting in my office here in Stanhope, Prince Edward Island, where the lovely bride and I built a house probably 5 years ago. I look out on the bay. I have a studio in the basement of the house. But there's still a lot of work. There's a lot of work in booking these shows. Like, I book everything myself. You know, I have a producer who comes into the studio and we record promotional adverts for the shows. And we used to record the show here, but we retired the show in 2020 in the middle of the pandemic. We just at 24 years said, that's enough. And then we'll go and see the folks in person. That's how they'll hear Jimmy. And it is a lot of work. I'm at my desk usually 7 days a week in one form or another, posting memes, keeping the funny going, whatever I can do to do that. Then rehearsing for shows, which is the one thing I don't like about the business, is rehearsing. So it's not just all fun and games. Doing the show is the best thing. You walk out. They know who you are because they actually paid to come and see you. You know, Jimmy will do a how's she going at the beginning, and you know what you've got just from the reaction to that one sentence. And usually it's, they know the voice, they know Jimmy, been to shows before, and so it's great. And, you know, there's a huge high at the end of the show. Like, I can't sleep for hours. It's so much fun.
I know how it feels. It can be a real pain in the butt to rehearse things, especially my experience in theater. You know, it's a lot more fun to actually perform on stage in front of people.
Yeah. Now, this rehearsing is important because, I mean, we do add a little flavor, you know, with little ads here and there, but it's not like I'm working the crowd for a bit. Everything that we do is tested, recorded at a show. You know, when I add new material to the show, we'll put it into the current show, record it, test it, mark every line at a 10, and see how it worked. And if, you know, you're running through this 2-minute bit and you're going, you know, the open was a 9 and a 9 and a 10, and then the next punchline was a 4 or that was a 2, then you're at a 10 or an 8, you know, the lower numbers get worked out. They just get erased and you relearn. And, you know, eventually, as we say in this business, that segment becomes gold. It works. Every line works. Every punchline works. And that's how it's done. So I'm always adding things to the show and taking things away so that we get around to the same markets every 3 or 4 years in Canada. And by the time you get back there, you have a new show. And it's all tested because it's getting tested every day. You can't just start making stuff up on the fly. I know it's done by comedians in nightclubs and, you know, they're using, you know, some serious F-bombs as punchlines. But that's not been what we have started out or continue to do. The show is clean. There's no four-letter words in the show. It's not to say it's, you know, it's a Bible school show. I mean, we'll do, you know, various segments that that are mature in a way, but they're not offensive and they're not rude. They're sort of grown-up things. That's why we have a 14 plus on the show. You've got to be 14 or over, have to lived a life of some sort to be able to understand some of the comedy. So the clean has worked really well. You know, I'll have a show with a Viagra segment in it, which is, you know, hilarious. And you'll be in the old days at the front of the building shaking hands, and the little old lady will come up and say, you know, oh my God, I love that show. You know, no bad words. And, you know, the Viagra thing was funny to her. So, you know, we'll get into different segments with different themes, but we don't use four-letter words, which are heavily used in the majority of nightclub stand-up, you know, the various tours, the Yuck Yuck tours. These guys are funny, but they're also using language that may not work for everybody. So we have a show that just stays away from that. And, you know, we just can't keep up with the demand for shows. You know, I'm catching up on 2.5 years of shows now, trying to figure out how we'll get enough. And I don't want to work more than 30 or 40 nights a year now. So it'll take us a while.
I did learn in radio school that in the 1940s or the 50s on the radio, they used to tell adult jokes without swearing. There, for example, I just got back from a dream vacation, and that was dropping off my in-laws at the train station.
Yeah, I mean, it works. That works well. And, you know, back, those were back in the days where you're on television doing that and getting away with it. And they thought, you know, the people at home were thinking, oh my goodness, did they really say that? But they'd sort of giggle. And but it wasn't a profane word. It was just, you know, relationship humor. And Jimmy has a lot of that in the show, you know, because we set the character up so that everything works for Jimmy. He was born in Newfoundland, raised in Cape Breton. He was married, he's divorced, he's got a girlfriend. So Jimmy can do just about any scenario. You know, he has friends and relatives in Newfoundland. He has friends and relatives in Cape Breton, you know, two of the best places for jokes. And I don't make fun of Cape Bretoners because I am one, and I don't make fun of Newfoundlanders because I spent a lot of time there and I think they're the greatest people in the world. It's not like you're doing Newfie jokes, you're doing Jimmy jokes, and Jimmy is putting himself in that situation, or he's putting his mother or his brother or his best friend Binky Bellabo. You know, Binky was a foil on the radio show, never heard. Basically, there was a voice for him, but, you know, he'd show up in double voice situations where I was playing Jimmy and also playing Binky. And so the character that I play, I am those people. And so I'm not making fun of anybody. It's a story that's happened to Jimmy. It's a story that's happened to his mother. So they all work out well, because I know Newfoundlanders hate the Newfie jokes, and the Cape Bretoners, you know, really hate the Caper jokes. But if you are living and performing what you know and lived, then you're telling tales from home, and that's fine. And there's a lot of great Newfoundland comedians who, you know, have the heavy Newfoundland accent. You know, they represent the stories in their community, storytelling. That's what we do in a comedic way.
Yes, I like it better when Newfoundland comedians make Newfoundland jokes, not somebody from the mainland pretending to be them.
Yeah, now that's what would happen, you know, if you lived in Ontario, and I've heard this done where people would be looking at the Maritimes and then trying to deliver a Newfie or a caper joke with what Jimmy would call an uppity Canadian accent, where they don't have anything, you know, like in our case, it's a story from a person who is from that area, who can relate the story better than someone who's just reading something out of a joke book or something they heard at the job site that day, and they're throwing the accent on, which doesn't work at all. It's better when it's stories from home, and that's kind of what Jimmy does, from down home.
The other character that is often featured in Jimmy the Janitor's stories is, as you mentioned earlier, Binky Bellabo. Where did the name Binky Bellabo come from?
It came out of Moncton when we first created the character in 1987. Bellabo is a popular name in New Brunswick. It's a French name, and I just looked for something that had a little bit of a light-hearted first name, and Binky struck me, and I just gave him that name, and it was Jimmy. Jimmy didn't have a last name when we started the show, but we were on the radio probably about a month. We started in January 15th, 1987. About a month later, Moncton had a huge snowstorm, 96 centimeters of snow on a Friday morning. So Jimmy's on the radio come Monday morning after the snow. We had done our bit Friday and the snow was falling. On Monday morning, because the union local in Moncton refused to go to work on Friday, we had 96 centimeters of snow that nobody touched until Monday. So it blocked all the streets, all the fire departments, all the ambulances. You couldn't move around. And it was a terrible situation. This was back in 87. And I don't know what local it was, Local 5 or something. And so Monday morning, Jimmy got on the air. And, you know, they all called in with the flu. That was the thing. On Friday, everyone called in with the flu, the entire municipal snowplow operation. And so Jimmy got on the air Monday morning and, you know, kiddingly, in part of the humor, said, you know, that flu, you know, you catch that from passing the bottle around the shop, you know, something like that, indicating that they were, you know, in the old days, they used to pass bottles, rye or whiskey around these shops to warm everybody up. And so they didn't like that. So there's a big letter to the editor about 2 days later in the local newspaper blasting the mayor for not acquiescing to the demands of the union, and blasting Jimmy the janitor for making fun of Cape Bretoners. And it was signed M.V. McDonald. And I said, oh my God, there we go. There's Jimmy's last name. So I pulled this guy's name out of the newspaper, and Jimmy became Jimmy the Janitor McDonald. And we announced that shortly after, not of course mentioning M.V. McDonald, but it was just a coincidence that looked like a really great name for Jimmy. And, you know, we weren't making fun of Cape Bretoners. Jimmy was one. So I think he was just ticked off because we had, you know, suggested that the boys caught the flu by passing the bottle around the shop. Anyway, it was a small thing, but it became, you know, became Jimmy's last name. So we've used it forever a day. It was interesting when my father passed, just before he passed away, I did a 2-hour interview with him. to tape on his whole life. And this was in Cape Breton, which was where I was born. And he indicated that my great-great-grandfather was Jimmy McDonald from Kensington area of Prince Edward Island. And they'd come over in the 1700s. And that I was actually, you know, our family was actually from Prince Edward Island. That was news to me. I had just met my future bride about a month before, and she was from Prince Edward Island, and I had been visiting the island for a few months, and it just happened that the McDonald name was actually our name, and I had picked it for Jimmy, you know, a few hundred years later, not knowing that I actually had a great-grandfather named Jimmy McDonald. So it was funny.
I really like Jimmy the Janitor's East Coast accent, and I really enjoy Maritime accents in general.
Oh, yes. Yeah, these characters love to tell stories. I mean, particularly, you know, the fishermen and the, you know, the guys working in the sheds at CN, meeting the boats, and these guys collect stories, they tell stories, that's their entertainment as they work, and they lug those big bins of fish onto the dock, or they're working out fishing, they're telling stories, and that is that's something that Maritimers, Atlantic Canadians, including Newfoundland, do very well. I've been approached in the early days. I did a lot of conventions, and I do them in different cities around the country. And people would say, now, are they going to be able to understand you, or will they understand what you're talking about? And I created the accent. And because of my background, my broadcasting background, the accent is well articulated. You understand everything, even though it's there's a definite accent there. And then the comedy's written so that you have to know absolutely nothing about the Maritimes to get the joke. That's the key. The whole Jimmy flavor is the delivery. It's the accent. The joke could be from anywhere in the world, but it's written as a story that Jimmy can relate to, has happened to him. You know, I'll do flying segments, you know, like about flying in Canada. And, you know, it's Jimmy's accent, but the story I'm telling, anybody can relate to, and you can understand it, because Jimmy's accent is easy to understand.
You and I had a conversation a little while ago about possibly making Jimmy the Janitor cartoons. If that ever got greenlit, how would you like the cartoons to be laid out, and how would you like them to sound and look?
Well, my image is that it's Jimmy in Cape Breton. He would have, you know, his little spot, his house just up the road would be, you know, his mother and father, and then it'd be a little village of sorts, and, you know, there'd be lots of interaction between them, albeit I would probably be playing all the characters. So that, you know, Jimmy's mother would have that, you know, I have a Jimmy mother voice on the radio show, and the father sounds this way, and the grandfather's older, and then Binky has a little accent, and, you know, so you'd come up with these accents and just lay them down. I mean, obviously it would be a script, and you would have, you know, all your scenes laid out, and, you know, you'd be laying this thing down in a recording studio, of course. My producer Dan would slip them in and build the cartoon. And so it would be, you know, it would be happy, it would be fun, it would be clean, it would be like the albums as far as the content goes. And there would be a laugh track. You know, I do like the laugh track from the old, you know, Seinfeld and Friends, and why not continue this with a cartoon for Jimmy the Janitor? And so that there would be, you know, as if it's being performed in front of a live audience. Yeah, it would be nice to do. I still like doing it. I, you know, from time to time get tired of traveling. But, you know, COVID gave me a huge rest. So I'm actually quite reinvigorated to get out there. And there's lots to do. So, I mean, as we speak, I'm sitting at a desk that has a whole pile of shows in front of me. I have to build a schedule. I just haven't found anything that in radio, it's so easy to produce sound effects and create that theater of the mind. So much more difficult and expensive to do it in video, television, animation. And, I don't know whether I have, the patience to do all that. Now, we have like 1600 or 1800 shows recorded. They're all audio. What we could do is we could come up with an animated, this is one thought I had, an animated Jimmy on stage and just use our radio shows that we could put out on the various streaming services. So you're seeing Jimmy animated, but what you're hearing is actually the joke from radio. And I had so many businesses. I had a broadcasting school and I had a dance business and I had rent a Surrey, which are four-wheel bikes. I rented those and had people run that. And I had all kinds of businesses on the go. And then I get into radio, and that's why the owner of the company said, how would you like to make money for me for a change? I said, okay. And he said, how would you like a station? I said, sure. And so then radio became my business as well as my passion. I enjoyed radio, but now I had to make money for us. And so that became a big thing as well. And eventually I wasn't on the radio anymore. And I was sort of directing traffic from behind a desk. And and that was exciting too, because I could get on the radio anytime I wanted to. I had Jimmy created, which was an outlet, but then we had the opportunity to run a big business, and that was exciting too. And I ran that for 30 years doing Jimmy conventions. I would leave my station in Moncton at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, be in Halifax at 7, on stage at 8, on the road at 9, back in the office, after getting home at 2 a.m. or whatever. I do that in Halifax, St. John, Fredericton, and Moncton, do these shows while I was working, and then I ended up working basically 7 days a week at the radio station, because I built a house in the woods behind the station, and I was a minute away, and would slip in and make sure everything was running, and clear some stuff off my desk and start another week. And so, I don't regret any of it. It's been a great ride, and it continues. The ride continues.
Before we wrap up, this last question is for all the aspiring comedians out there that want to follow your footsteps. What's the most important aspect about being a character comedian?
I don't think it's different than being a regular comedian. I think just what's the most important thing, it's preparation. It's working at developing whatever it is you do. And that's what you have to do. You have to be writing something every day. You're not going to be instantly funny. And then you have to test this material. You have to write a bit that you think is good, figure out how you're going to get 5 minutes at the local community concert to go out there and do your 5 minutes. 5 minutes is a long time, and a long time to be funny. And you may not be, but you have to go out there and, figure out what's wrong. And you have to think when you're going out there that this is not going to blow them all away, and be surprised if it does. And just rehearse that thing, get your 5 minutes in, tape it, take it back, listen to the show and say, okay, of the five, this minute worked. Let's try another new 4 minutes with this. And then any opportunity you can. If there's a little comedy show going on in town or at a local bar, see if you can sneak in at the front end of that. You know, you don't want to be paid, you just want the experience. So whether you're doing a character or whether you're doing a straight stand-up, you know, you can be any kind of comedian. You can, you know, you can have four-letter words in your show if that's your thing, you know, or you can be clean comedian, you can be a character, you know, a number of characters have made it, or you can have a shtick. You know, Jeff Foxworthy had this redneck thing that he built his career on that made him famous. And, you know, he took all this old hillbilly stuff that's been around for 100 years and he built it into a show. So, you know, he took those old lines that people used, you know, you might be a redneck, and went through the roof. With Jimmy, the character on the radio was the key. I remember flying into Medicine Hat shortly after we had launched the national radio show. And I'd never been to Medicine Hat before. I was there to do an oil company show for a company called Encana. They had a big show. And I was invited, got off the airplane. I was walking in with a flight attendant. And I knew we were on the radio station there for about 8 months. And I said to her, I said, you know, if there's a theater in this town, this is a big oil town. And she said, I don't know, I'm not from here. The guy standing just in front of me at the baggage area said, you looking for a theater? I said, yeah, like a soft seater. You got one here? He said, yeah, we got the Esplanade Theater. It's a big theater, 700 seats. I said, okay, well, thanks very much. He said, why do you need a theater? And I said, well, I do this character named Jimmy the Janitor. And we're on the radio. He said, you're Jimmy the Janitor? And this is the first guy I met in Medicine Hat. And he said, oh, we listen to you every day. I said, well, that's great. Thank you. Thank you. So I get in the cab. I'm heading down to the Medicine Hat Inn to do the show. And I say to myself, well, I'm going to try this again. So I asked the cab driver, ever heard of Jimmy the Janitor? And he said, yeah, we listen every morning at 7:20. And I said, great. Thank you very much. And so we rented that theater in Medicine Hat for the first show we did in the national tour, and we sold 700 seats in Medicine Hat. And so that was the beginning of touring the country. And we would put these theaters together, or we'd be in Split Lip, Saskatchewan, and have a 300-seat community center. People would drive for an hour. That was their community hall, and Jimmy would show up and do a show for 300 and then drive, you know, an hour to the nearest hotel and crash.
Well, it's been fun having you on the show this week, Sandy, and I really enjoyed hearing the story about how you got into radio and how you got into comedy. And I look forward to seeing you do more stuff because you are very talented.
Well, thanks, Crash, and we will see you down the road.
And that was Sandy Gillis, better known as Jimmy the Janitor. If you wish to purchase Jimmy the Janitor CDs, or if you'd like to look at upcoming tour dates, visit jimmythejanitor.com. That's all the time we have for this week, but remember, here at The Medley, we're all kinds of different.